You've tuned in to The Face of
The Doctor on Triple J.
Mr. Jack White, thank you so much for chatting to Triple J today.
Oh, thank you.
And you're about to go on stage right now.
Very soon, yeah, very soon.
That is right. Well, thank you very much for chatting about your record. I'm going to talk about a bunch of it. It's so much to talk about. Let's start off from the very first song on Lazaretto. It sounds like, Jack, that it sounds very live. It sounds like everyone's in the same room. What was the studio set up for recording the songs?
That was the fellas that were on tour with me on the last tour. And they were we were all in my studio, and I had just written that music, and I was showing everyone the parts, and we just all were sitting there. So we tried it out, and I just threw this line about, well, from our old Blind Willie McHale song called Three Women Blues. I just sang a line from that, and then I ended up sort of rewriting that whole song.
Yeah.
Right there while everyone was there, and became a new version of that song, a 21st century version of that song, I guess.
It was great. When I looked at the liner notes and I saw that it was a co-write between Jack White and Blind Willie McHale, I had to look up the original song.
Got three women.
What a brilliant guitarist and singer. Yeah, he was amazing.
Not bad.
That's great.
Yeah.
This album does seem like, and I know that you've always done your homework, but you've really gone and found these amazing parts of musical history and turned them into your own.
I think so many of the people have been playing with me in the last couple of years, since Third Man Records opened about 5 years ago. I've had so many different kinds of people playing with me in Nashville on different recordings that I've produced. You know, whenever you think of something, there's somebody right there you can play it. If you think of a steel part or a mandolin part, there's usually somebody 100 yards away who can come and do it. So that's what's nice about being where I am right now.
That's great. So you could just, as you were writing the songs, place a call or just look around the studio and go, can you please help me with this?
Yeah, that's sort of the new way I'm creating it. It's sort of a sea of hired guns around me. So it's not being in a band like the Dead Weather or the White Stripes. So it's a different scenario. Or Raconteurs, Saboteurs, as you know them, done it. And they, being a band scenario, it has a different taste to it. You don't work on songs the same way because everyone just has their different position in the room and different position in the outcome of what you're creating. So when you have hired guns around you, you know, even if they're your best buddies, you know, if they're still session musicians there, it's a different scenario to be paid to play. So that sort of puts you in a different position as a producer and a songwriter and a performer. I sort of have three different hats to wear at the same time. And I like that spot to be in because it really pushes me to push myself to go to some place I haven't been before.
Yeah, which you absolutely have on this album. And you, of course, on this album, do you play, or what? Tell me what instruments you play on the record.
Oh, I play piano and guitar, and I don't know what else I play. I think maybe drums or something. No, I don't really know. I play just mostly piano and guitar, I think.
So that's cool. So, like, unlike, say, with White Stripes, where you would stretch out and do, like, all the crazy, marimbas and parts and stuff, and obviously drums with Dead Weather,
yeah,
you could sort of outsource to these amazingly talented people.
Yeah, sometimes I didn't even play guitar. You know, I mean, again, a song, Would You Fight For My Love, Dean Fertitta plays the guitar in that song, and Olivia Jean played guitar in some of the songs instead of me. If it doesn't call out to me that I have to play it, I try not to. And nowadays, when I'm working on this stuff, as a writer and a producer, you're creating all of it anyways. You know, and a lot of times, if it doesn't need that certain stamp, it can be another talented person in the room. You know, just try to let it happen.
That's brilliant. I'm going to actually play "Would You Fight for My Love" right now. It's we played it for the first time about a week ago now, and people absolutely love it. I don't reckon you've recorded a song like this before. It's like that. It's that soundtrack or an Ennio Morricone sort of tune, but all messed up. Can you tell us about this song, Would You Fight For My Love?
It's a strange one. It was two or three different songs that I was working on at once. I edited them all together on tape with a razor blade. And at one point, we actually punched the entire band in on a whole other band's recording. It was all the girls were playing on one middle part of the song. And then when it gets louder near the end, it jumps up a notch. And that's me and the fellas all punched in right over that recording. It was a very dangerous thing to do. We could have made a big mistake and erased a second of the song on accident, but we got lucky with it. It worked out.
I think the energy of having it recorded in analog and having it make or break time would have helped as well.
Yeah, that happens a lot at my studio. We you've recorded a fiddle solo, and if you don't like it, we just record another one. We erase the old one and record another one. And a lot of times, some musicians who haven't experienced it before, it's very scary to them. Like, whoa, whoa. I mean, it's a very... Pro Tools is a very undo world. You just press click undo or whatever, then you're back to the one you just did before. But with analog, you have to decide immediately whether you like it or not and whether you want to erase it. And I love that. Mm. And I like shooting from the hip like that and making those decisions really fast.
Well, let's have a listen to it now. This is Would You Fight for My Love by Jack White off Lazaretto on Triple J. Jack White on the phone. Triple J, as you can hear, the beautiful, is that that's Ruby Amanfu singing on at the end of that track, Would You Fight For My Love, Jack?
That's right, she is. She's doing sort of a very beautiful operatic voice there.
So good. And Dean Fertitta, as we said, from Dead Weather and Queens of the Stone Age. I've got Jack White on the phone. We're talking about Lazaretto. We talk about lyrics. We talk about a song with no lyrics, the very first song we heard from Lazaretto. Highball Stepper. Was it always supposed to be instrumental?
No, it was I was intending to write lyrics when I got a minute later on, but I had recorded that with the gals while we had a whole day to ourselves off of tour, and we had gone through that song, I think, maybe three times. We recorded three takes of it. It was three different wild takes of that song. Mm. We're very, loose, because I was sort of telling them what to do in the room while we were doing it and directing it that way. And I thought, well, I'll edit them together later on and see what happens. And I did that a couple of months later, and I said, oh, well, I'll get to the lyric writing later. And then just, 8 months had passed, and I still hadn't gotten to that song yet. So by the time I got to it, it just felt like it wasn't. I had already played it for friends, and they thought, they kept responding to it so highly just from hearing it without any vocals on it. So then by the time at the end, I thought, well, I guess it doesn't need any vocals. It doesn't need it. I mean, people already are feeling something. If they're already feeling something, I'm not going to add anything to it. And it's not broke, don't fix it. So I just let it be that feeling.
You said that you recorded it live, like three takes of live stuff. The sounds like there's a reversed pedal steel. Was that recorded live, or is it like, did you do that later?
But no, it was in the room. We had a pedal, a guitar pedal that plays things like they're backwards. Whatever you put into it plays it backwards. So she was asked to try it on the pedal steel because I wanted to see what would happen, because you use a slide on a pedal steel. What would happen with the slide is going backwards all the time. Something interesting might happen. It got a little psychedelic sounding, and we got something new out of it, I guess.
You certainly did, which also leads up to that amazing bit. The song kind of finishes, it sort of winds down to a finish, and then... Now, is that just one guitar? Is that just one guitar?
That is, and it was... I told my son, Henry, when I was playing that for him, and I told him at the end, I said, I'll be careful now because there's something really scary at the end here, and I want you to get scared. And we listened to everything at very loud volume, and it happened, that thing you just played happened, and he said, well, what do you think? Was it scary? And he said, well, it was louder, I guess.
Bloody kids. Kids aren't scared by anything anymore.
I thought I knew him, yeah.
Hey, talking to Jack White, I should talk, in the middle of the album, there's this like perfect pop song with the piano pop riff and all.
Lost feelings of love, lost feelings of love, that hover above me.
Alone in My Home, tell me about that song. It sort of stands out as almost like a contemporary pop song.
Yeah, I felt good that kind of song. I was on a trip in Mexico with the Dead Weather, and we were just had a guitar around us at the house, and I wrote a couple of songs while I was down there. And that was one of them. I didn't write it for the Dead Weather. I was just writing just because there was nothing to do that day, and that song came out. And I thought, yeah, when I get back home, I'll work on this later down the road. And I did. It was. I actually put that recording I did in Mexico out with Durban Records. We have a vault. Record club, and that's that people are getting those right now, the demos of that song and that I recorded in Mexico. By the time we got there with the whole band, it turned out to be something pretty interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it does, and I like the fact that whilst people are buying the album now, people are also getting the original version in the Vault Club.
That's right, yeah. It's a nifty way to do it, and to get them. They can get the version of the album on vinyl the week that the album is coming out. It's pretty cool, too.
Now, my dictionary tells me that a lazaretto is a quarantine station. So what was the idea behind, I guess, that song and calling your album Lazaretto?
It was a lyric first. It was just I said they threw me down in a lazaretto. I was just kind of elaborate on this character. And then that became the name of the song. And then when I was going to call the album The Wit of the Staircase, but it seemed like it was a too high and mighty sort of notion, too many words, you know, too much of a mouthful. So I just thought Lazaretto would be a lot. It's a prettier word, just like blunderbuss was. It's a very pretty word that you might have to look up to see what it means, and maybe it could lead to some other thoughts. I don't know.
That's a very good idea. The Wit of the Staircase is that l'esprit d'escalier, the French term that means like you're acting before you think or something.
You got the French part right. That's right. Yeah, that's something to do with the you're thinking of the most clever thing. You're thinking the most clever thing as you're walking up the stairs after an argument.
Yeah, it's like that episode of Seinfeld where George has to fly back to get his perfect retort back. Right, got it. Anyway, you didn't call your album.
Yeah.
You didn't call your album that. You called it Lazaretto. And the song. tell us about the song Lazaretto, which apart from has an amazing violin jewel in it. Tell us about Lazaretto.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly how that song came about. I wrote the bass line. I started constructing it in the studio, I think, and that one became very energetic and really funky, really fast. I liked working on that song.
I read some of the lyrics for the album come from plays and things that you'd written as a child.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I found a batch of things in a box, and I was just kind of taking things and throwing them away and cleaning house a little bit, and I found some writings, and they were okay. They were just sort of scribbles and different ideas and one-act plays and poems and things. I don't do that as much anymore. I don't keep a journal like I did when I was younger and keep all these writings. I write when I have a task to do. More so because I'm so busy all the time working on different records that I don't really need that journal anymore like I used to before when I didn't record when I was playing music. I didn't have gigs or anything like that, so I was writing things down all the time. So I thought, what if I collaborated with my younger self and we wrote a song together? I taught myself how to write a song. That's how I tacked a couple of the tracks.
What was it like seeing your 19-year-old self and collaborating with your, like revisiting you when you were 19?
It's nice because, you know, you don't have any experience really as a teenager. You have all the hope and the romance ahead of you if you're a romantic sort of idealist that I was then, you know, and looking to see what was going to happen next. And now I'm twice that age and I've, you know, been around the world once or twice. And so I'm looking at it from a more realistic perspective. I still have my romantic idealism underneath, but I'm very, very thick-skinned. I've been bruised and, you know, insulted and I understand differently about what love means and what friendship means. And so it's very, you look at those words in a totally different context, and I get to tell my younger self what it's really like, but I don't want to break his heart, you know. I want him to still stay romantic. So.
Well, he'd be stoked to know that 19 years later, you turned his plays and writings into songs on the new Jack White solo album. What are some of the songs that your 19-year-old self helped inspire?
One of them is called Black Bat Licorice. Which is, I just sort of took different lines and things and put them together in a whole new context. Got me to a new place as a songwriter, I think, that song.
I'm gonna play that song at the end of the interview because it's my favorite song from the record. Were you as a 19-year-old talking about Freud and Nietzsche and Horace and that stuff, or was that was that the now Jack White?
Oh yeah.
Oh, you were.
Oh yeah, yeah, very much. I was interested in being a Freudian patient and seeing what that was like. It was a very still never done it. You know, I have to do 5-hour sessions with someone on a couch, you know, and very intense psychoanalytical sessions. And I never did that, but I was interested in that when I was younger. But I wouldn't do that now anyway. But I never got a chance to do that. But that song, yeah, we mentioned a couple of things like that.
And the Castrum Dolorous, which is like decorations around a fancy coffin.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
People are texting. James from Launceston is very excited about the album. He's ordered the deluxe LP version, and I think you've made some vinyl nerds' wet dreams come true when you announced about a month ago the deluxe edition. Hidden tracks under the labels, locked grooves, which means the end of each side plays looped riffs forever, different intros to Just One Drink, depending on where you drop the needle, and holographic etchings.
Yeah, just a couple of tricks, yeah.
How do the holographic etchings look? Like it's like 3D projecting out like Princess Leia in Star Wars.
Yeah, it's a right side up and an upside down angel. Well, they're spinning around, floating above and below the record, you know. So it's a wild, this artist, Tristan Duke, had been working with these in metal plates. And we figured out a way to make it happen on our record, too. We didn't have much time because by the time we were already mastered the record, we only had a couple of weeks left to actually perfect that idea. and we figured it out at the last second how to make it work. And it really is something very nifty. It's never been done really on a vinyl record at all. So it's something new. And maybe we can take that to new places with other Third Man releases too.
I can't wait to see what comes next out of your vinyl magic trick box. What about that that song, the recording of Just One Drink? It sounds like a live recording, but there's two intros. How did that work?
Yeah, I just couldn't decide how we wanted to attack that song. So when the band was there, we did an acoustic version of it in the studio, and then we did an electric one right after that. And then we'll come back later and see which one I like better. But it's just too busy to bother with it at the time. So by the time we were working on this idea, I said, well, what if we have the first half of the song is both of those versions, and then they come together and become one in the middle, and we figure out a way to do it with two concentric grooves. And that's a nifty little trick, too.
I mean, a lot of people are going to get this on CD, or they're going to download it, but for the people who get the deluxe edition, they are in for a treat. Now, I'm talking to Jack White. You're about to go on stage. Tell us about your band, because last time we saw you play here in Australia for Blunderbuss, there was two bands, one all female and one all male. You've kind of consolidated that now.
Yeah. Schedules were all crazy. You know, for that many people, it's going to be very hard to get everyone back on board because they're all musicians. They make albums and they're in bands. So we got lucky with the last album that everyone's schedule was clear, but this was a lot harder this time. So we decided to just combine the bands together a little bit. You know, some people will come and play a couple of shows with us, and somebody else might come and do a television show with us or something like that. We're all still a family, you know.
That's awesome fun. And how about coming to Australia, Jack White?
I'd love to. I'd really love to get down there. It's just such a long flight, you know. If you guys can speed the flight up a little bit more, it'd be easier.
Come on, if anyone can do that using the skills that you've, accustomed, between your vinyl skills and your knowledge of Tesla, you could probably do that, Jack White. Right.
I don't mind the flight so bad. I'd love to come back. I hope we can do that pretty soon.
Beautiful, man. Well, I'm going to finish with my favorite song on the album, as I said, Black Bat Licorice. Just before we let you go, what is Black Bat Licorice and how did it help make this song?
That was a product name I saw on some television show that was talking about old candy from 100 years ago. And one of the things said that Black Bat Licorice on it. I said, well, that's an interesting name for black licorice. And I said, I hate black licorice, but I like the name of that product. But the television show had got it wrong. It was a mistake they had made. And that was a fake product that an artist in Germany made up. He made up a fake sign that said, you know, buy or eat Black Bat Licorice. It was like a fake sign from 100 years ago. And that product never existed. So even more so, I wanted to put that in the title of the track because of that story. So I thought that was interesting.
That is so very funny. I love that. All right. Thank you so much, Jack White. Have a great gig tonight, and we'll see you hopefully in Australia soon.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks for the support. I appreciate it.
It's the Doctor on Triple J.